Hello, everyone, and welcome to Local Matters. I'm your host, Buddy Pearson, and on this podcast, Education Matters. Our guest this week is Bridget Carwile, the Chief Academic Officer for Putnam County Schools. She also does grants, federal programs, kind of do a lot of different stuff. Bridget, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so your title, Chief Academic Officer, what does that mean?
Well, when you think chief academic officer, you think academic, but you also think money.
Yes.
So federal programs, of course, is a lot of money coming into the district. And so just kind of monitoring those, making sure that we get what we're supposed to get and that they are compliance matters. Of course, when there's money, there are strings attached.
Right.
So making sure that we are in compliance.
So let's start with where the money comes from. Obviously, sometimes people don't think about money when they talk about education and they talk about public education, but we are a public school system with almost 12,000 students, and obviously that has to be paid for. So where does the money come from to pay for basically to run the school system?
Sure. So there are different pots of money. There are state and local funds, which now are called TESA.
Yeah.
And then we also have federal money that comes into Putnam County, and that comes from Washington.
Ah. So, well, let's talk about the local money then.
Okay.
So how do we go about getting that money? How do we go about collecting the money that's in those pots?
So with TESA, it's a funding formula, and it's from the
Now,
the
is TESA
state.
An acronym, or is it just called TESA?
It's called TESA. It's the Tennessee Investment Student Act.
Okay.
Student, yeah.
Yeah.
So, and it's from the state. It's new. We used to have something called BEP, which was a funding formula. But with TESA now, it's based on student.
Okay.
So the funding follows the student.
Hmm.
So we have to make sure everything's coded correctly in our student information system. We have to make we have to ensure that all of these things are correct on our end, or we will not get that funding for
so
each
like,
student.
What are some of those things that have to be correct?
So English language learner.
Okay.
So these are our English language learners. They have to be coded a certain way. Students who may be living in poverty. I'm trying to think of others.
Yeah. So if I have, say I've got a 9-year-old student that's in elementary school, and so would there be a certain amount of money allocated for that particular student?
Every student has a base.
Okay.
So every student gets an X amount of dollars. If they are an English, a student with that needs English language learner, then they get X amount on top of that. If they are a student who has an individual education plan, an IEP, they get an additional X amount of money on top of that. We also, if we... Every school in our district is something called it's called a concentrated poverty. We get X amount of more money on top of that. So every school in our district meets that criteria except for one.
Okay.
And so that has to be 40% poverty, and all of our schools meet that, which is, it's great because it's extra money.
40%, what do you mean 40% poverty?
40% poverty, which means 40% of our students at each school.
Or that, under
the
poverty
level. Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. And we have a lot of those.
Yes.
Wow. Because I don't think a lot of people may not know that.
No, they may not.
Yeah.
So it's important that everyone fills out those free and reduced lunch forms, even if your student is eating at a school that is eating free.
Yeah.
It's so important that those free and reduced lunch forms are filled out, because even though you may not think you qualify, you may qualify based on those numbers. And that really does help get that concentrated poverty number and that level for the money for that school.
See, this all sounds very complicated.
It is, but it isn't. I mean, it's just, I've done it for so long.
Yeah, to you, it's. I mean, I can tell. So the TESA money comes in, and then what happens?
So then our CFO and Mr. King and Mr. Martin, of course, it has to follow the student.
Okay.
So it doesn't matter if that student transfers from a Baxter school to a Monterey school, that funding has to follow that student.
Okay.
So we are very intentional of where we need money. We have a needs assessment. We have our strategic plan that we follow. We have to look at quarterly. Where are we in meeting these needs? what else is needed? Do we need to back up and punt? So we're just constantly looking at what our needs are, and is that money really following the student?
So how much TESA money do we normally get?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. That would be a question for Mark.
Yeah.
I'm not real sure. There's a calculator. Mr. King and Mr. Martin and Mr. McReynolds constantly are looking at those numbers. April Hale, our student information supervisor, she is constantly having to update those numbers and make sure that the coding is right. And if something's off, where's it off and why?
Right.
So it's a constant battle.
Yeah.
Every day.
Well, what about the federal money? So then TESA comes from the state. What about the federal money?
So the federal money is based on, of course, the federal budget, what monies are allocated from the presidential budget. And, of course, it's political, you know, back and forth on who gets what. So usually it just depends on – but the monies come from Washington, D.C.
Okay.
So – once the money is allocated and they pass a budget in Washington, then Tennessee gets a set amount of money.
Gotcha.
So then once Tennessee gets that money, it's based on how much money does Putnam County get. Again, it's based on that poverty number.
Yeah, kind of a need thing.
Yes.
So you've got your local, you got your federal money. Do they usually stay the same? Do they fluctuate? I mean, can you kind of guess what it might be? Because, you know, you have to kind of look ahead on what you're spending money on and all those kind of things.
We're always planning. And, you know, it just depends. Politically speaking, with the federal money, it's kind of you never know. What are they going to really focus on? What are they not? What are they going to take away? You know, it just kind of fluctuates. Usually, I used to be able to tell you exactly how much money we were going to get.
Right.
The funding formula has changed. We have asked for that funding formula for a little more transparency. This past year, it's been the State Department kind of had some findings from USAID, and they've had to change their funding formula. So it's been a little bit different.
Okay.
And because of that, they have come in and taken money away from us, all districts. The majority of districts across the state had money taken away this current funding year. And then for next year, we're a little bit less than what we've had in the past.
Yeah.
And that could change again, depending on what happens in Washington. So.
Well, we're talking with Bridget Carwell, who is the chief academic officer. We're also talking about monies that come from locally and from federal. And when these monies come in, now, you see these, do you try and help distribute those and kind of figure out? Because to me, that would seem like that would be a hard job to do, is figuring out who gets what money. It'd either make you very popular or very unpopular, depending on the money.
Sure. So with federal money, you have something called Title I schools.
Okay.
Those Title I schools get the federal money.
Now, what's a Title I school?
So a Title I school has to meet that threshold. They have to be 40% or more
in poverty.
Gotcha. To be eligible.
Yes.
For Title I funds.
Okay.
So what happens is the district, we go back to that strategic plan.
Right.
Where is it that we want to spend this money? Mm-hmm. What are our major goals? What are we looking for to improve?
Yeah.
We have really focused on early literacy in the past, and we are continuing, of course, with the new third grade law.
Yeah.
We're really looking at that early literacy and the importance of that. So we, all of our elementary schools except for one, meet that criteria.
Okay.
Of 40%. So all of our elementary schools except for the one school is Title I school. They're school-wide schools. And then all of our middle schools are Title I schools. And then we have White Plains.
Wow.
That are. So that's kind of been our focus. All of the high schools do meet the criteria.
Right.
But there's just not enough money to spread around. We don't get that much money to spread around. But because of our focus and because we feel like the need is in that early literacy area, we focus on elementary. And we have enough money for our middle schools.
Now, I see that, you know, principals, of course, are still working during the summer. Some teachers are off. But this is like May, June are pretty critical months because the Putnam County school system budget cranks back up in July. It goes from July 1 to June 30th, and then it starts all over again. So here we are at the end of this budget year, and what is that like for you?
It's the same. It's very similar to what the local is, too. So again, our financial year starts July 1,
right,
and it ends June 30th. So we're trying to wrap things up, seeing if we need to, you know, if we overspend a little bit in this line, where do we need to make it up? So we're doing some year-end cleanup is what we call it.
Yeah.
And then we're also focusing, trying to get our budget ready for next year. So our budget is due to the state May 1st.
Okay.
We already have an approved budget for next school year for federal. For our Title I schools, all that has already been approved, so we're good to go when we start school. The schools already have had their Title I preliminary budget meetings. So every school has a Title I committee, and they decide how much money and where, or not how much, but what they're going to do with their pot of money.
Yeah,
for their school.
Because you know you see where Mr. King has gone to the county commission. He's been talking about budgets and so all the money. People are just like, well, where does this money go and what's it all for? And really, the fact that we have several schools that have 40% students under the poverty level, I think speaks volumes about why we get the money that we get, and we have to have it.
We have to have it to function. We really do. Every school that has Title I money, of course, again, it's that compliance piece.
Yeah.
It's the hoops we have to jump through. So every school that gets funding gets they have a committee, and they have to decide what are the needs for their school, mm-hmm. and how they're going to spend that money. And I can tell you the majority of them spend it on interventionists, on people.
Yeah.
They look at, you know, what are the needs of our school, of our students. Most of it is poverty for intervention purposes. And, you know, they're helping kids in smaller groups, pushing them, trying to get them to those proficiency levels academically.
Awesome. All right. Well, I'm Buddy Pearson. You're listening to Local Matters. We're talking with Bridget Carwile, Chief Academic Officer for Putnam County Schools. Well, this is Local Matters with a focus on education. I'm Buddy Pearson, and our guest this week is Bridget Carwile. She is the Chief Academic Officer for Putnam County Schools. She deals with grants, federal programs, all the money stuff. So, Bridget, how did you come into this position? Did you grow up thinking, I want to be the Chief Academic Officer for Putnam County Schools?
Not hardly. So, I graduated from Livingston Academy in 1994. Went to Austin Peay to play basketball.
We won't hold that against you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I understand. Had an injury, had a coaching change. We did win the OVC my sophomore year. Had an injury that required surgery, surgeries, and I ended up transferring back to Tech to finish up.
Okay.
So there you go. I'm an alumni
of
Tech.
Okay, good.
Of TTU. So I finished there in 1998, started my teaching career in Overton County at A.H. Roberts. I taught fourth grade for 3 years and then went to the computer lab there and taught for like 7-8 years.
Oh, wow.
And then an opportunity, you know, kind of happened for me, and I became principal at the school that I was teaching at, which is kind of unusual.
And where is that at?
A.H. Roberts.
Yeah.
In Overton County.
Okay.
And so I was principal there for a couple of years, and then another opportunity presented itself, and I became supervisor of federal programs in Overton County.
Oh, wow.
And then did technology while I was doing that, and then a little switch during the years. Technology was dropped, and I added CTE to my to my plate.
Yeah.
Yes. And then another opportunity presented itself a few years later, and I went and worked for the Tennessee Department of Education for a couple of 2 or 3 years, kind of being a consultant for federal programs.
Was that in Nashville?
It was in Nashville. My home office was, of course, at home.
Yeah.
But I did lots of travel. I had the top half portion of middle Tennessee that I consulted with and helped their Title I coordinators at the district level,
right,
how to spend their money, making sure they were in compliance.
Yeah.
And then the travel was just a lot.
Yeah.
My kids were little at the time, and so I was missing a few ball games. And as a former athlete, I just hated that. And
right.
So it was just time. And Dr. Nash, who was here, who I was working with, she decided to retire. So I applied for her position, and Mr. Boyd was kind enough to give me the opportunity
to
come back to Putnam County
yeah.
and work. And I have been here since, and I've loved every minute of it.
Yeah. So you live in Livingston still?
Yes.
And tell us about your family.
So my family, my husband, we've been married for almost 26 years.
Wow.
And we have two children. Nathan, he's almost 22. He, graduate of Livingston Academy, went to Maryville College, mm-hmm. played football, has been lucky enough that he actually has been admitted to UT pharmacy school.
Awesome.
So he will start there. He got to choose where he would want to go, and so he chose Knoxville, of course.
Of course.
The football.
Yeah.
So he starts that this fall. We're really excited and proud of him. And then Mally is she's almost 18 in a few weeks.
Wow.
And she will be a senior at Livingston Academy. And she plays the extracurriculars, too. She does volleyball and basketball as well.
Plays basketball like her mom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, she does. I think volleyball is probably her favorite. Actually, if you ask her what season, it depends on which season you're in.
Yeah, yeah. So when you're not dealing with all the local and federal money and you're not going to ball games, what are you doing outside of that?
Outside of that, we spend a lot of our time at Del Hollow Lake.
Yeah.
Willow Grove is our favorite place to be. So we are loving lake season. We love it when it gets a little warmer and things are kind of a little quieter.
Right.
But, yes, so we spend a lot of time. We like to surf. We like to watch our kids surf. And we play games and cards and just like to gather and eat and have a good time.
Well, it looks like your background, I mean, you have such a varied background of been in the classroom. You've been an administrator. You worked with CTE stuff and now money that I would think that a lot of administrators in the school system can pick your brain, they can come to you, and that you can really offer some help to teachers, to principals, just in a lot of different areas.
I hope so. I hope they know that. I try to help as much as possible and try to troubleshoot and talk through and walk through different scenarios, different ways. Always want to be solutions oriented.
Yeah.
I try to help them focus and go back to what's your need.
Yeah.
You know, what was the need here? What's the end goal?
Right. Well, how do you enjoy still going to basketball games? I mean, seeing your daughter play where you played, that has to be pretty special.
It is special. It's a tradition, of course. You know, the old Hall guy.
H-O-G-E-Y-E.
Yes. So it is. It's exciting, and it is humbling, too. Try not to yell too much at her. But, seriously, it is good, and Coach Riddle does a great job with those girls, building character, instilling that tradition in them. It is a community. It is a family. And there's just, you can't buy that.
Yeah.
I mean, no matter what, you can't buy that. And you can't tell somebody about it either until you've kind of lived it and been through it. And both my kids they're instilled in that Hawkeye tradition, of course. Nathan had Bruce Lamb.
Yeah.
And Jimmy Miller, of course, to help instill that in them. And that family and that tradition. And that, you know, you just want them to win. You want them to, and it's not just about the winning. It's it's that community. It's for the home team.
Yeah.
It's for the home crowd. It's for those that came before them that have laid the foundation for them to be better. So
do you ever lace up the high tops and show her how it's done? Do they even wear high tops anymore? Because, I mean, we did when we played, but, I mean.
You know, she has had a couple of low tops, and it kind of scared me a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm like, what are y'all doing?
What are you doing?
Yeah, and so I guess the last time I laced them up, she was still at Rickman Elementary. And this is a funny story. Katrina Huddleston has the pictures and everything probably to prove it. So I got my shoes out of the closet, and Mally is shaking her head saying, Mom, please,
don't do it.
You are not putting those on. I'm like, these are antiques. These are sweet. These are great. I got there, put them on. I mean, I was ready. Marley Sales, who is actually coaching Livingston Academy now, she was there, and she said, who do you want to guard, Bridge? And I said, I want to guard my daughter.
Yeah.
I'm guarding her. And so as I'm walking out on the floor, everybody just starts dying laughing, and I'm stepping out of my shoes. They disintegrated. They were so old. They disintegrated across. And so Mally was mortified in front of her little friends. But Katrina and Marley thought it was the funniest thing ever, and it was pretty funny.
But I did play.
I just went and put my shoes back on.
Yeah. You know, just stick with the boat and the lake life now. And
I think I should have retired and never got those shoes back out.
And don't worry about it now. You know, I know you follow and this is totally off topic of education, but you and I, we talk basketball a lot, and you see like Caitlin Clark and going to the WNBA and kind of where women's basketball is now. How much more elevated do you see women's basketball than when you played at Austin Peay?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, when I was at Austin Peay, there may have been 25 people in the stands.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine playing. I mean, and what Caitlin Clark has done for the game.
Yeah.
Itself, and everybody wants to watch it.
Yeah.
They want to watch what she's done. She has really transformed women's basketball, and what a gift she has been given, and then what a gift she's given to women's basketball.
Right.
So I just think it's fascinating to watch. It's wonderful to watch. I'm so excited for the women's game and where it's going. I mean, who knows where it's headed?
Yeah.
But it's going places, and it's exciting to see.
I can't believe she was left off the Olympic team. But
yeah, me either.
Yeah.
That's a whole nother topic.
Okay, that's a whole nother. We'll take a break now. Buddy Pearson, you're listening to Local Matters. And this is Local Matters with the folks on education. I'm Buddy Pearson, and our guest today is Bridget Carwile. She is the Chief Academic Officer. We've been talking about local money. We've been talking about federal money. We've been talking about compliance. We've been talking about a lot of good things, basketball, you name it. But I do want to kind of go back and revisit, we were talking a little bit about, when we get the money and part of your job is like distributing it and that kind of thing and where it goes and how you decide. I mean, that's got to be one of the hard things is deciding, because you might have people say, well, I've got this need and I need this much money, and there's not any money to give them.
Yeah, so it is a little stressful. So once we get that pot of money, what I do to determine how I give it out to the schools that are Title I, it's based on strictly poverty. It's based on those numbers.
Yeah.
So they get a per student allocation.
Okay.
And so...
So let's say... let's say what Jerry Whitson, there's what, how many students?
Say there's 206, I think, this year.
At Jerry Whitson. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So right. Let's say out of the 206, let's say 195 of them were living in poverty.
Okay.
So they would get a per pupil allocation, let's say it's $500. So it would be $500 times the 196
yeah, whatever,
kids.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's their Title I allocation.
Okay.
So they can determine what to do with that money, whether based on their needs.
Yeah.
And they have a Title I committee at their school that meets three times each year, and they kind of look at what their school improvement, their needs are. Okay, well, based on this, we need to use this pot of money for this. So they usually get to, I think it's two, interventionists, and then they pay for those through federal money. And so with that comes some paperwork.
Right.
With the government, there's going to have to be some paperwork.
Dot the I's and cross the T's.
That's right. We've got some documentation that we have to, prove to them. Yes, this is a need. This is the committee says this, and this is what we want to do with the money.
Yeah.
So you've got your agendas, your minutes, your sign-in sheets from all these meetings that they have.
Right.
But they're constantly going back and looking at their school improvement plan, because let's say they've moved. They've got a Tier 2 group, and they've moved all of them out. They're all proficient now.
Yeah.
Well, that's fantastic. Now what? So let's look back down at their school improvement plan and what are some more needs that they have.
Okay. And that's something that you help them with and help them work through and kind of help allocate dollars, because, I'm sitting there thinking, all right, if I'm at Jerry Whitson, I got 195 kids that's getting, say, $500, and we got this Title I money. It might be new laptops or textbooks or,
That's correct. So
several different things, and it's up to each individual school then to decide how they spend that money.
That is correct.
And then does anybody come along from the central office and say, well, hey, I'm not sure that you're spending that money correctly, or is it just up to them, hey, however you want to do it, it's up to you?
Well, there are some allowables.
Okay.
And there are some unallowables.
Okay.
I mean, they can't go out and buy gift cards for people or anything like that.
Well, that's what I was wondering. Are there some parameters?
There are parameters. There are guardrails. And
okay.
I am the guardrail.
Yes, the watchdog.
Yes, no, this, maybe. But let's look at that needs assessment again. But yes, so people are the number one. So most schools have interventionists.
Right.
Some have support, educational assistance.
Right.
That they use Title I money for. A lot of schools use money to buy Chromebooks.
Yeah.
But we have to be careful. It's supplemental money. So when you think of federal money, you need to think about if I take all the good things away. So let's say we're going to bake a cake.
Right.
And the icing on the cake and the sprinkles on top is the federal money.
Okay.
If I take away the icing and I take away the sprinkles, are my kids still going to get an education? Yes, they are.
Right.
But this extra stuff is just, you know,
yeah.
It's the extra stuff on top. It's the sprinkles. It's the extra. It's supplemental.
I got you.
So it's supplemental.
Because the main money comes from
TESA.
TESA.
Yes.
And what, I mean, also in the county commission gives us, you know.
State and local monies.
State and local monies. Mm-hmm. Yes. Right.
Yes. And so anything that you get with federal money has to be supplemental. And so we have to ensure.
Yeah.
My job is to ensure that anything they're spending funding on is supplemental. It is extra to their normal education.
Because I would think that somebody federally would come in and say, hey, how are you spending this money? And then you have to go through and show them how that money is spent.
That is correct. And then it's not just how, it's, well, why did you choose this?
Yes.
Why did you choose to spend it on an interventionist?
Yeah.
Why did you choose to spend it on computers?
And what's an interventionist?
An interventionist is a teacher.
Okay.
It's a teacher, but it's just they're using that person for tier two or tier three, and it's just a smaller group. It's more intensive than your tier one, which is your whole class. So, but that's what an interventionist is.
And when we talk about, you know, I'm sure when federal come in and they look, you talked about compliance and how important compliance is. What are some of the things that Putnam County schools have to comply with in order to keep getting this money?
Yeah, so we have to do an application every year.
Okay.
And the compliance piece is that documentation I was talking about earlier. Let's look at that school improvement plan.
Right.
Let's look and make sure that you are hitting those things that you say are your needs. How do I know that you're, you know, based on the committee, based on the documentation from the minutes,
mm-hmm.
Your budget, where you budgeted the money, those sign-in sheets are so important. And that's why we do meetings 3 times a year, because we don't want to just at the beginning of the year say, well, this is our need.
Yeah.
We're constantly looking and reviewing, because what happens in, let's say, December, January, mid-year, you know, we look at our mid-year benchmarks and we notice, gosh, our math has really tanked.
Yeah.
But our reading looks pretty good. Do we kind of shift our focus?
Okay.
Possibly. You know, why do you want to wait until May and do something about our math scores when we knew that our math was tanking in December?
Yeah.
So we're constantly looking. It's an ebb and flow.
Right.
Or as Sam Brooks would say, it's a fluid situation.
It's a fluid situation.
Sam Brooks is famous for saying that around here. But we're constantly looking. And some of the things that they look for is, most of the time, is just documentation.
Right.
You know, when we buy something, are we going through the proper channels? Are we making sure we get a bid, or we're buying off a cooperative purchasing agency group? You know, there's just lots of checks and balances, and you know, it's almost like playing ball. It's those X's and O's.
Right.
You have to be strategic.
Yeah.
You know, and making sure that you are hitting the needs of the student.
How difficult is your job?
I've done it for so long now. It is stressful at times, just because right now we're not getting a lot of communication from the department.
Okay. Tennessee Department of Education.
Yes.
Right.
And part of that is because of the Department of Education that's happening, you know, the federal Department of Education. It's been a tough couple of years because of that. COVID has not helped things.
Sure.
We got all the extra money, which was federal.
Yes.
All the ESSER. I mean, there's been lots of compliance, lots of monitorings. Comptroller has been here a lot. So, I mean, that part of it is stressful. We do have our stuff in order. We have it in line.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, making sure that we have dotted every I and crossed every T along the way. But what is frustrating is, oh, yeah, we forgot to tell you that this should have been. It's just the after the fact stuff that they, oh, yeah, we should have told you that we needed this for compliance. Yeah. But we didn't.
Yeah, sorry.
So guess what? You need to fix it now. Or so that part has been stressful, and that came with ESSER a little bit.
Yeah.
But we've made it. We've jumped through those hoops. We've made it. We've made it work, and I feel like we've really done well with how we spent those funds.
Yeah. So what do you like best about your job?
Well, I like being able to help the schools think strategically.
Yeah.
Really look back at their needs assessment, which is aligning more and more with our district strategic plan too. But they really have to hit those things, and that we're all in this together.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a bigger picture. I think, you know, having the background of being in that classroom.
Yes.
I just had 24 kids, you know, that I was responsible for, and I knew my job and I knew what I had to do. And then when you move to that principal job, it's a little bit of a bigger picture.
Right.
And then the supervisor level, you really do have that big picture. You know, you're really overlooking and seeing, oh, here's the big picture. So it's really communicating and really helping the schools, the principals, the teachers understand the big picture.
Yeah. If somebody was getting ready to come in to your job, what would be some advice that you would give to them?
Know your people.
Yeah.
Have your network ready.
Yeah.
And know and be able to communicate transparency with your stakeholders.
Okay. Yeah, because I would think, I mean, money is it's one of those topics that, you know, it creates a lot of angst, anxiety. It, you know, where's the money going? Where are you getting the money? Where is it going? And like you said, you have to be transparent because, you know, it's all open record. It's all there for everybody to see. So if, I mean, it can be questioned. It can be all those kind of things. So you got to be ready to answer.
Absolutely. And documentation. Yes. And there are strings attached. I mean, it's just like we said, anything that's supplemental, there are strings attached. And I know my principals would probably tell you, I thought you were going to tell me yes on this, but you told me no.
And so that's got to be hard.
It is hard because you want them to have what they need and they feel like they need to be successful. But, you know, once you explain everything, again, it's communication and being forthcoming. But they know now. Most of them have been here long enough that they know, oh, yeah, that's not allowable. There's no way she's going to let me buy that.
Well, Bridget, thank you so much for being with us. That's all the time we have for this week on Local Matters. Bridget Carwile, the Chief Academic Officer, really telling us about how the money comes in, how it's distributed, and all the things that go with that. Thank you so much, and I hope you enjoy your summer.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. Have a great week, and God bless.